You are listening to 93.3 FM WNRB LP Wausau. Free people, free radio. Coming up next, a show the NSA always loves to listen into, and stop tapping my phones. This is The Mike Cannon Show.
Warning. The views expressed on The Mike Cannon Show, or the segments brought to you on this indie media radio show, do not necessarily reflect the views of WNRB nor WNRB's hosts.
Guess who's back again.
Mike Cannon.
This is my boomstick!
This could be dangerous. You should go back.
I know you're out there. I can feel it now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. You're afraid of us.
What do you see when you're in the dark?
Warning.
At my signal. Unleash hell.
Such a catastrophe for you to see so damn much of my ass you ask for me. Well, I'm back. Fix your penance and I'm tuning in and I'm gonna enter in and up under your skin like a splinter. The center of attention. Back for the winner. I'm interesting. The best thing since wrestling.
Stand by to receive our transmission.
Soon as someone mentions me, here's my 10 cents. My 2 cents is free. A nuisance, who sent you?
I'll explain, and I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you wart-faced buffoon.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
And now, the only radio commentator not addicted to illegal pain medication, nor Viagra, Mike Cannon.
Welcome to this week's Indie Media Radio program, The Mike Cannon Show. For well over 2 years now, The Mike Cannon Show has been bringing you weekly news and information that the six mega corporations that combine own over 85% of all television, newsprint, and commercial radio stations do not want you to hear. The attempt of The Mike Cannon Show is to bring you alternative information and voices from around the country and the world, voices big profit-driven businesses do not bring you. If you like your news sanitized, regurgitated, and spoon-fed to you by the corporate handlers, then this is not the place for you.
You can't handle the truth!
You know, I think you can handle the truth, and pound for pound, you get more of it each and every week here on The Mike Cannon Show. The Mike Cannon Show is produced for not-for-profit, community, and micropower radio use worldwide at the Glee Glee Studios. This show and many of the segments I bring to you each week can be found on RadioForAll.net website, which acts as a kind of clearinghouse to us not-for-profit producers. Again, that site is RadioForAll.net. We'll get right into this week's show. The lineup for this first hour is the lineup you've come to know and love. We'll have some shorter pieces including Women's E-News and Media Minutes, to name a few. Later you'll get the piece I produced for Alternative Radio World Ether out there, known as This Week in Radical History. And shortly we'll be bringing you Eat the State, produced out of Seattle, Washington. Eat the State is a great anti-authoritarian weekly news and review roundup segment. That's the journey we're on again this week on The Mike Cannon Show. And as always, thanks for traveling with us.
It is 8:30, and we have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the State. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Moving on to national, and one of the government's leading biodefense scientists who died on Tuesday.
Yeah, their lead researcher in developing a vaccine for anthrax, Bruce E. Ivins, a 62-year-old biomedical researcher at Fort Detrick, Maryland. He'd been actually working there for 35 years. He was the FBI was just on the point of arresting and charging him in the anthrax mailings. Folks might remember back to just post 9/11 in 2001, the anthrax mailing killed 5 people and sickened 17, and caused a major panic around the United States about terrorist attacks through the mail. Bruce E. Ivins, it turns out, was one of the guys who actually helped the FBI analyze the anthrax used in one of the attacks. He also was engaged in some suspicious activity at his own lab, including cleaning up anthrax and not telling anybody. Usually when there's a spill outside of a containment area of a controlled thing like anthrax, what researchers have to do is they fill out a report, they do cleanup, and they do follow-up. He didn't do any of the filling out reports or telling anybody. He just went ahead and did his own little cleanup there, which made him a suspicious person in the case. But the FBI didn't follow up until 2006, when Robert Gates replaced the people who were in charge of the investigation. Then they started taking a look at Ivins.
Robert Mueller.
And this guy, you have to understand, had a history of making homicidal threats since the time he'd been a graduate student at university.
Raised the question about his security clearance to work on top secret bioweapons.
Exactly. So the FBI has and the U.S. military have a lot of explaining to do about how they run their background checks, how they do their security. And the FBI has a lot of explaining to do about the whole investigation in which they initially targeted Stephen Hatfill, and it turns out he was not the guy.
Yeah, I think those FBI background checks, they only check for if you're working with select agents, they only check if you have had a criminal history, with the government. Otherwise, they don't check for psychiatric history or restraining orders
or anything like that.
Yeah, even though these guys are dealing with extremely toxic substances.
All right, moving along. This week's police blotter.
Yeah, there was an awful lot of interesting news down at the courthouse this week. First of all, Ted Stevens, he of the internet has a series of tubes. He himself went down the tubes this week, which was always nice to see, and couldn't have happened to a more deserving person. This is basically, as it turns out, probably the person that the FBI has been after, as they've slowly worked up their way up their food chain of corruption in Alaska State Republicans over the last several years, including relatives of Stevens, Republicans in the state legislature there, and of course Don Young, the representative from the state of Alaska, is also under investigation for several different things. He has resigned his seat this way as a ranking Republican in the Senate Commerce Committee, which is probably a good thing, since the Senate Commerce Committee actually does have jurisdiction over the internet, and Mr. Stevens thinks it's a series of tubes. Interesting story this week, speaking of the Senate, that came out a GAO report, and then also highlighted on the floor of the Senate by Senator Claire McCaskill, a Democrat from Missouri, that the Defense Contract Audit Agency, that's the audit arm of the Pentagon, is implicated in a really damning report that the GAO put out last week, saying that, among many other things, the DCAA was basically intimidated by, or shut down from, or actively conspired with military contractors to hide evidence of waste, of overspending, of performance problems in weapon systems. And surprise, surprise, one of the military contractors that was listed as being the source of some of the corruption of the in the audit process, and that also tried to shut down and pressure the GAO investigation of the DCAA was none other than Boeing, which is particularly interesting because no local media here in Seattle, at least not the daily papers and not the television stations, happened to mention this, which raises kind of an obvious question. Why is it when the Mariners run into problems, our local papers can be honest about it? When Boeing runs into problems, not so much. We also had Monica Goodling taking the fall for her former boss at the Department of Justice this week, the DOJ Inspector General, and the Office of Professional Responsibility issuing a joint report this week saying that Goodling and a couple of other aides under former AG Alberto Gonzalez essentially broke a lot of laws and regulations, particularly what they called systematic abuses of the hiring of avowed conservatives, and not just any conservatives, but they had to be a particular kind of red meat conservatives. Conservatives for civil service positions that are supposed to be politically neutral. That's a problem. Also, you had three different people, Monica Goodling being one of them, who were accused of lying to Congress. That is a crime. Now, the interesting thing about this is that Goodling was targeted for a lot of the blame on this. Goodling happens to be the one person in this this whole narrative of Attorneygate who is immune from prosecution because she cut a deal with Congress whereby she would get immunity in exchange for her testimony. So it's just happens to be a remarkable coincidence that she's now been blaming for being blamed for a lot of the problems of the Department of Justice, and Gonzalez, of course, saying that he had no idea, absolutely no idea, was completely shocked that any of this could have been going on in his watch, which if you believe, there's a bridge somewhere that Mr. Gonzalez would like to sell you, and it's not in Texas. And then finally, we had the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, an outstanding environmental group that watchdogs government agencies and especially the EPA, leaked some documents this week that the EPA last month instructed its staffers not to answer questions from congressional investigators, from the GAO, from anybody else who's investigating any number of issues that the EPA is under investigation for, particularly whether there was political interference in the decision not to allow California to regulate greenhouse gases. So expect more on that one coming up soon.
All right. That takes us over then to this week's economic news.
Yeah, there were two more bank failures over the weekend this past week. They were smaller regional banks, First National Bank of Nevada and First Heritage Bank of California. You'll notice that they're in parts of the country that have suffered the worst housing price falls in the housing crisis. Both banks were seized by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and currently the FDIC is working to sell those banks' assets to a larger regional bank, Mutual of Omaha Bank, which means, of course, we're going to see a lot of this smaller banks that got involved in the whole mortgage housing fiasco are going to be swallowed up by bigger banks. So we're going to see a lot more of this. This brings the total of bank failures this year to 7 so far, when I think we've had maybe 4 banks fail in the last 7 years, something like that. Meanwhile, Merrill Lynch, another massive investment bank, narrowly avoided a Bear Stearns-like collapse this week by holding a fire sale of its stock and some of its assets. They sold a bunch of their mortgage-backed securities for $6.7 billion, and that turned out to be about one-fifth of the value of those assets a year ago. And they sold them to a private equity firm called Lone Star. They said that they also announced that they're going to sell about $8.5 billion in new stock, and this sale is going to dilute current shareholders of Merrill Lynch by about 38%. Now, that's a slippery slope there when you say, instead of being able to borrow money, we can't really borrow money to cover our debts and our cash payments. We're going to have to sell more stock. That's a slippery slope, because that's pretty, that's, that could devalue the company even more, make it even harder for them to meet their debt commitment. So that's a mark of their desperation. So it's very possible that in the end they could need a bailout just like Bear Stearns. We'll have to see. This week also the IMF issued its global financial stability report looking at the whole global economy, and it was pretty pessimistic about the global economy primarily because of the U.S. housing market and the resulting credit crisis. The IMF, unlike happy talk politicians and economists here in the U.S., doesn't think we're at the bottom yet, doesn't think we're ready to turn a corner at all. They claim that in their estimate, we're going to see $1 trillion in losses in the banking sector. So far, banks have only reported about $469 billion in losses since last August. So we're not even to the halfway point, much less ready to turn a corner. This week also, Big Oil announced its profits. It's the six largest oil companies in the world reported $51.5 billion in combined profits for the second quarter. That's just for the second quarter, not for the year. ExxonMobil in particular, well, let me just name them. ExxonMobil, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, BP, short for British Petroleum, Royal Dutch Shell, and Total, which is a French company. The profit really, if you look at ExxonMobil's report, they said their profit was made mostly on their upstream operations. That means the drilling and extraction of crude oil and natural gas. If you look at their downstream operations, though, refining and retailing, they actually took a loss, especially due to the price of gasoline in the U.S. Apparently, the price of gasoline in the U.S. is still too low. So I think we can see how gasoline prices are being subsidized here in the U.S. by the high cost of crude oil on the international market, and that there's room for gas prices to go higher, even though we've seen a little bit of slippage in the crude oil price this past week. It's not enough to make a difference.
All right. Moving on to international and starting with Afghanistan.
Yeah, several things going on in Afghanistan this week. Of course, the end of the month of July. We've mentioned the past couple months that there have been more deaths in Afghanistan than there have been in Iraq. Well, that changed in July. This month, there were nearly two times as many soldiers, U.S. soldiers, dying in Afghanistan that there were in Iraq. And it was also the first time that there were more overall soldier casualties in Afghanistan than there were in Iraq. Meantime, a report came out this week saying basically that we've been going in Afghanistan all wrong, that between 2005 and 2007, the U.S. Switched to a heavily into reliance on an air war in Afghanistan. They went from dropping 5,000 pounds of munition a month in early 2005 to 168,000 pounds of munitions per month in December of 2007. And civilian casualties, not surprisingly, have gone up in a similar fashion. In fact, even just in the last year, they're up 62%. And surprise, surprise, as those civilian casualties have increased in Afghanistan, support for the Taliban has been far greater, too. Now, the interesting part about this is that almost nobody is talking about the appropriateness of the U.S. war in Afghanistan, and that includes the anti-war movement. We had several things going on this week in the Puget Sound area. This week, there was more arrests, I think 9 people all told, down in Tacoma with another shipment through to Fort Lewis through the port there. We've got a couple of events today, one on Iraq, one on protests on Iran that we'll talk about when we get to events. But there's been almost nothing either in the local anti-war movement or more broadly in local political coverage or media coverage that really focuses on the war in Afghanistan. This is particularly problematic because most Americans are much less skeptical of that war than they are of the war in Iraq, even though our strategy has been equally flawed and disastrous in Afghanistan. It's probably just as unwinnable a war. And we have both Obama and McCain saying that they're going to shift the focus to Iran if they're elected president, and one of them certainly will be. So this is something we need to start paying a lot more attention to.
All right. Finally, Maria, about 30 seconds for the WTO talks that failed this week.
Yes, the WTO talks failed. They were trying to get the Doha round up and running again. This is probably the last chance they would have. And they failed because China and India held the line against the U.S. position that all barriers should come down regarding food shipments. And China and India basically said, no, we want to allow poorer nations the ability to protect themselves against an influx of cheap imported food in order to keep their farmers working on their farms and growing local food. This is called food security, you guys, in the U.S. Let us have some. And it's particularly important now that food prices are rising. And it's amazing how oblivious the U.S. negotiators were to this sensitive issue.
And then on Wednesday, it's the 63rd anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima.
All right. Talking as we do every week with Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State comes out every couple of weeks with news, information, comment, web at www.eatthestate.org. Or if you have questions, comments, tips, any of that kind of good stuff, email us. Our email is info@eatthestate.org.
And that is it for us today here on Mind Over Matters.
You know you only had one shot to make it right, to do the right thing. So listen to the Mike Cannon Show.
From the Young Turks program.
Voters in San Francisco are planning on naming a sewage plant after George W. Bush.
Now, I love that story. I do. It's awesome. Except I've seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw it a couple of weeks ago. And I don't know why I didn't do it on the regular show, because that's a great little thing, man. In fact, you know what? All across the country, you can do it. You just go to your local city councils and stuff and lobby for it. And the thing is, a tremendous percentage of people agree with you, even in conservative towns. But in liberal towns, name all the sewage plants after George W. Bush.
How awesome would that be?
Come on, man. This should be our... We should put together a campaign on this. This should be like a rebel headquarters campaign.
Right.
Okay? As many sewage plants as we possibly can named after George W. Bush in this country. Let's do it. Move forward. Go forward.
I'm wondering if this man is oblivious to things like this. I mean, does he know that more than 7,000 people in San Francisco signed this petition to have that sewage plant named after him? 7,000 people in one city want to name the damn thing after him.
You know what? I don't listen to polls. You can't listen to the polls. I go by my gut here. My gut says I don't belong in a sewage plant. So I don't want to go there. I don't want my name on it. But hey, you know, if you do, that's okay. Because I made bank. I got my Benjamins. About to buy a big house in Dallas. Laura's looking for one now. Yeah. Booyah. Take that. Here's my sewage plant on top of your head.
And that's what he did. That's what he did to us. That's what he did to the country. So in a sense, he'll always have the last laugh on that. But it would be great. All across the country. Oh, look at that. That's another George W. Bush sewage plant. Hmm. Anyways. Or just for short, you can name them all W. W. And then it could become a synonym for sewage. W.
Women's E-News, weekly summary of news about women, women's issues, and from women's perspectives. From the weekly Cheers and Jeers column of August 2, 2008. I'm Sandy Billings. Leading with the good news, Cheers, a sexual assault bill gets a boost. The House Subcommittee on National Security and Foreign Affairs held a hearing examining the problem of sexual assault in the military. The hearing triggered reintroduction of a bill that will help military victims recover from assault and prosecute perpetrators. In the most recent fiscal year, 131 rapes and assaults against female soldiers were reported officially. More news to cheer this week. Michigan became the 11th state to expand electronic monitoring of violent abusers. This week they passed a law allowing GPS tracking devices to be attached to abusers even before they go to trial. The device sends an alert to a victim's cell phone if a suspect gets too close. Massachusetts, Hawaii, and Oklahoma have enacted similar measures. Saudi officials and anti-violence advocates met in Jeddah to discuss improving coordination between agencies. They laid out goals to protect victims, ensure that all victims get shelter and legal assistance. Another goal is to increase penalties for abusers. girls had their strongest showing in the 71-year history of the American Soapbox Derby. The race was held in Akron, Ohio on July 26th. Female competitors won 5 of 6 divisions and swept the 3 major competitions. The winners are Joanna Barnosky of Akron, Haley Badle of Tallulah, Tennessee, Megan Newcomer of Danville, Indiana, Caitlin Smith of Federalsburg, Maryland, and Courtney Rail of Washington, D.C., who, at age 16, became the oldest competitor in the Derby's history to win the Masters division. The Women's National Basketball Association scored an A-plus for both gender and race diversity in a report card by the Institute for Diversity and Ethics in Sport at the University of Central Florida. The WNBA's combined grades were the highest in the history of the report card. WNBA's Donna Orender is the only female league president in U.S. professional sports. Females in Front, a network of members of the European Parliament, wants to see at least one woman appointed to a top position in the European Union following a restructuring anticipated by the Lisbon Treaty. The group has collected over 24,000 signatures for a petition toward that goal. 1 million signatures from EU citizens are required to spur a citizens' initiative. This petition is directed at the European Commission, and it requests the Union implements gender parity measures. Currently, 31% of the European Parliament members are female. And now for the bad news. Jeers for the Bush administration's definition of contraception. Reproductive rights advocates continue to criticize a Bush administration proposal from July 15th. The administration seeks to redefine contraception as a form of abortion. The proposal allows medical providers to refuse to provide birth control services and referrals when it clashes with their private religious beliefs against abortion. Advocates this week warned that the federal proposal could supersede state laws that require hospitals and clinics to provide emergency contraception to rape victims. Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, told the Washington Post, quote, "Women would be totally subject to the luck of the draw when they want to get reproductive health care," unquote. Abortion services continue to become more difficult to obtain in the U.S. Almost 90% of counties in the United States have no abortion provider. In western states, where women may travel up to 300 miles to reach a facility, abortion is going to become increasingly inaccessible as doctors retire and are not replaced. Wyoming has only one abortion provider who works at a clinic was bombed by protesters in 1995. South Dakota has one clinic for abortion services and a doctor is flown in for a few hours a week to provide the care. In Idaho, 3 doctors have performed abortions in recent years. One retired last year and a second will retire this December. More news to jeer this week. During the tenure of U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, the Department of Justice used alleged homosexuality as a litmus test to hire and fire employees. This, according to a July 29th story in the Los Angeles Times. Margaret Chiara, one of 9 U.S. attorneys fired in 2006, says she believes she was dismissed because of false rumors that she was a lesbian. In a 16-month study of workers in Singapore, half said they had been sexually harassed on the job. A tenth of respondents had been told that they could lose their jobs or miss promotions if they didn't grant sexual favors. Almost 3/4 said they were not aware their companies had policies to protect them. Also noted in the news this week, South Korea's Constitutional Court has overturned a 21-year-old law that prohibited doctors from revealing the sex of fetuses. The law was passed in 1987 to help prevent sex-selective abortions. The court ruled the ban was too restrictive and said Korea had grown out of its preference for sons, noting that the nation was nearing the national gender ratio of 106 boys for every 100 girls. The sexual abuse trial of 28-year-old Virginia Mokobo has begun. Mokobo worked at the Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy near Johannesburg, South Africa. Winfrey spent $40 million to open the girls' school in 2007, and she praised the students who came forward to report alleged abuse by Mokobo. These news briefs were compiled by Allison Stevens and Jennifer Thurston. Rita Henley Jensen is the editor-in-chief. This production of Women's E-News is brought to you by VP Foundation and Yen Radio. Background music is by Joan Hickey. This column and more news about women can be found at the Women's E-News website, www.womensenews.org. For Yen Radio, I'm Sandy Billings.
And now, Mike Cannon.
The Mike Cannon Show, normally heard Mondays from 2 to 6.
My thanks to Mike Cannon at WNRB in Wausau, Wisconsin, who rebroadcast World Report.
Welcome to Media Minutes. Welcome to the weekly radio spin, a look at the stories behind the news, brought to you by the Center.
Peak Oil Check-In, exploring the end of the age of cheap oil.
Women's E-News, weekly summary of news about women, women's issues, and from women's perspectives. From the weekly Cheers...
This Week in Radical History for the week of April 7th.
My name is Scooter, and this is the Inner Side Radio Program.
This Week in Palestine, the service of the International Middle East Media Center. I am Ian.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out on WNRB, Wausau, Wisconsin.
All these programs and more can be heard each week on the Mike Cannon Indie Media Radio Show, normally heard every Monday from 2 to 6 p.m., right here on Central Wisconsin's only non-corporate, commercial-free community radio station, 93.3 WNRB LP, Wausau. Free people, free radio.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement. The Federal Communications Commission voted to approve the merger of the country's only two satellite radio companies, XM and Sirius. Sirius bought XM for $3.3 billion. Consumer groups and traditional radio broadcasters opposed the deal. Mark Cooper, Director of Research for the Consumer Federation of America, says that with a monopoly, there is no reason to stay competitive, which can affect price and talent.
We think the evidence is pretty clear that they actually did compete with each other. They went out and looked for talent, they developed formats, they advertised, they invested in research and development, the kinds of things that we associate with competition. If you look at the merger analysis, people thought that the way they were going to save money is to actually stop doing those things that reflect competitive rivalry.
Cooper says consumers can look forward to a loss of formats, less emphasis on new and creative programming, and fewer hosts with star power. In addition, depending on how the FCC actually words the order, the merger could set a precedent for future mergers among other media companies. The key word, Cooper says, is intermodal.
Essentially, what the XM and Sirius said were, even though we're the only two satellite radio service providers, there's other kinds of radio that consumers can listen to. There's terrestrial radio, plain old AM, FM radio. They talked about iPods and internet radio, none of which is really a substitute for the unique product that satellite was offering.
If the FCC accepts the premise that satellite radio had vigorous intermodal competition, it could open the door to more media consolidation.
In the long run, the great danger is that once you start accepting the intermodal competition argument, the whole fabric of regulation of media ownership starts to unravel because the TV broadcaster will come in and say, hey, look at all the other forms of entertainment the consumer has, so you ought to let us merge.
Watch what you're watching. Fox keeps feeding us toxins. Stop sleeping, start thinking outside of the box and unplug from the matrix doctrine. But watch what you say, big brother is watching. Watch what you watch.
Hip-hop artist Nas joined protesters outside Fox News Channel in New York City on July 23rd to deliver more than 620,000 petitions demanding that Fox end its pattern of racist attacks against black Americans, including presidential candidate Barack Obama and his wife Michelle.
Calling Michelle Obama Barack's baby mama. Tell me, is that acceptable? Is that racist? Bill O'Reilly saying a lynching party. Do you know what that means? A lynching party for Michelle Obama might be legit. Is that acceptable? Is that racist?
The protest was organized by colorofchange.org, moveon.org, and Brave New Films. The signatures were gathered in less than a month. Andre Banks, Deputy Director of Color of Change, says that his organization, founded after Hurricane Katrina, to unite people around the idea that, regardless of race, every American should be respected, served, and protected, has been monitoring racism on Fox News.
What we're seeing is a pattern that didn't start with the Obamas, and it certainly won't end with the Obamas unless a greater action is taken, and we're trying to be a part of pushing for that larger action. So, I mean, the Obamas certainly have put a spotlight on what has been a very consistent pattern for Fox, and that is you know, using people's race to cast them as outsiders in their own country. And what we've seen with 620,000 petition signatures is something that Americans don't want to see. It's a conversation about race that sets us backward and doesn't move us forward, and it's not what anyone wants to see on Fox or elsewhere.
Come out that little studio and stand up here with the people like a man. Stop standing behind a desk and dictating this BS to the public. Come outside with the people and let's see where your heart is. Let's see what kind of man you are. Say lynch party around some of these women out here and see what happens.
Watch, watch, watch what you watch. Watch, cause they watch. Watch what you watch. Media misleading ya. Watch what you watch.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit www.freepress.net.
From Countdown with Keith Oberlin.
But our winner, Goodling Gate, the story yesterday that the Justice Department had found that Alberto Gonzalez's protege, Monica the Church Lady Goodling, had illegally screened would-be immigration judges and line prosecutors for political and ideological affiliations, this just keeps getting better and better. Goodling liked to ask candidates which government figure, besides President Bush, of course, was their favorite. One candidate, reads a case history buried deep in the Justice Department report, reported that after he stated he admired Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, Goodling frowned and commented, "But she's pro-choice." The full report even includes the information search on job candidates, which Goodling would have entered into her for the LexisNexis database. If you're unfamiliar with LexisNexis, it's kind of an industrial strength Google. Look at this. First name of candidate and last name of candidate with Bush or Gore or Republican or Democrat or charge or accuse or criticize or blame or defend or Iran-Contra or Clinton or Spotted Owl or Florida recount or sex or controversy or racism, or fraud, or investigate, or bankrupt, or layoff, or downsize, or PNTR, or NAFTA, or outsource, or indict, or Enron, or Kerry, or Iraq, or WMD, or arrest, or intox, or fired, or sex, or race, or intox, or slur, or arrest, or fired, or controversy, or abortion, or gay, or homosexual, or gun, or firearm. Wait, Spotted Owl? Or Florida recount or sex? Oh, God, you just made me think of Catherine Harris. Notice sex and arrest are in there twice. Well, it's thorough. This necessitates that we create our own LexisNexis search for Monica Goodling, which would look like this. Monica and Goodling with nuts or crazy or psycho or gossip or rumor or made-up crap or diploma mill or found law a degree on street or box tops or what's them out of you or theocracy or speaking in tongues or thinks ghosts living under her bed or perjure or privacy violates or secret forbidden crush on Wonder Woman. Seriously, though, if only they'd had Monica Goodling use her monomaniacal vetting on the Iraq War, we'd never have gone in. Vietnam or Quagmire or Curveball or Land War in Asia.
Welcome to the Weekly Radio Spin, a look at the stories behind the news, brought to you by the Center for Media and Democracy. I'm Judith Sears Poisson.
And I'm Diane Farsetta. In our top spin, a corporate spy with a long history of infiltrating activist groups has resurfaced. Mother Jones magazine reports that for the last decade, Mary Lou Sapone has been active with gun control organizations, but she was secretly working for the National Rifle Association. Using her maiden name of Mary McFate, she volunteered with numerous local and regional gun control groups, even running for a board seat with the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. Gun control activists were shocked when her true identity was revealed. She had placed herself in the innermost circles of the movement. As a result, she had access to very sensitive and strategic information. One activist said that through Sapone, the pro-gun groups could, quote, learn a lot, what the grassroots of the gun violence prevention movement intended, where our priorities are shifting, which legislation we would be promoting or fighting against, who our targeted legislators would be, what our messaging would be before we put it out there, end quote.
Corporate spies can be found worldwide. A freelance Australian journalist recently revealed that she was approached by the private intelligence gathering firm Hakluyt. A Hakluyt representative emailed her to ask if she would be interested in being part of a, quote, network of well-placed individuals around the world who are able to provide us, very discreetly, with intelligence on specific commercial or political issues that may arise, end quote. The journalist responded that she is a reporter, not a consultant. The Hakluyt rep replied that, in fact, her status as a journalist could be an advantage, and that they already work with a variety of reporters. In 2001, it was revealed that Hakluyt had successfully infiltrated Greenpeace in Europe.
On the last day of the British Parliament's spring session, no fewer than 30 ministerial documents were released. Some called the document dump Take Out the Trash Day, after this exchange on the U.S. TV drama about the White House, The West Wing.
What's Take Out the Trash Day?
Friday.
I mean, what is it?
Any stories we have to give the press that we're not wild about, we give them all in a lump on Friday.
Why do you do it in a lump?
Instead of one at a time?
I think you'd want to spread them out.
They've got X column inches to fill, right?
Yes.
They're going to fill them no matter what.
Yes.
So if we give them one story, that story's X column inches.
You give them five stories?
A fifth the size.
Why do you do it on Friday?
Because no one reads the paper on Saturday.
The documents released by the British Parliament included a list of salaries for special advisors, criteria for potential sites for new nuclear power plants, and a list of guests invited to the Prime Minister's residence.
Brace yourself for a slew of feel-good ads supporting biofuels. Ethanol producers including Archer Daniels Midland, Monsanto, and DuPont are working with PR giant Burson Marsteller to save their subsidies. They've formed a front group called the Alliance for Abundant Food and Energy. Their goal is to counter criticisms that the push for biofuels is causing food prices to skyrocket globally. Federal mandates for alternative fuel sources in the U.S. have been a boon for agribusiness corporations that produce ethanol. The group is gearing up for a major lobbying push that will coincide with a multi-million dollar national ad campaign.
And now it's time to play 6 Degrees of Spin and Fakin, our look at the connections between media manipulators. We mentioned Mary Lou Sapone, who sometimes goes by her maiden name, Mary McFate. The corporate spy spent the 1980s worming her way into animal rights groups while working for a security firm called Perceptions International. Sapone even encouraged activists to take part in violent or illegal activities. One person, who was convicted of planting a pipe bomb near a corporate CEO's parking space, accused Sapone of coaxing her into the plot. Another animal rights activist decided to test Sapone by telling her about a fake demonstration. Within days, the activist received a call from a government official asking about the supposed demonstration. In the 1990s, Sapone began infiltrating environmental groups. Working with the security firm Beckett Brown International, Sapone helped spy on Greenpeace and its allies. The environmentalists were working in an area of Louisiana that's so polluted it's known as Cancer Alley. Sapone then went on to run her own intelligence gathering business called Strategic Solutions Group before her most recent stint with the National Rifle Association.
That's this week's edition of the Weekly Radio Spin. For more information, visit the Center for Media and Democracy's website at www.prwatch.org.
Sit back, relax, breathe in. Slowly, there you go. Enjoy the Mike Cannon Show.
Yo, check this out, man.
For a minute that powerful people might get together and have a plan. Doesn't happen. You're a kook. You're a conspiracy buff. Who, you know, the only way you cure that... death, bloodshed. I don't advocate it, but I see that it's really the only answer.
Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talk about a revolution.
This week in Radical History for the week starting August 4th. Inspiration came from the Slingshot Organizer, and more radical info can be found in the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes. Hey, hey!
As reported in the San Francisco Herald on this date, August 4th, 1869, San Francisco land speculator Emperor Norton I declares the United States dissolve, and the greatest and wise ruler of the United States abolishes both Democratic and Republican parties. He's quoted in the paper as saying, "Party strife now exists within the realm. I do hereby dissolve and abolish Democratic and Republican parties, and also do hereby decree the disfranchisement and imprisonment for not more than 10 years and no less than 5 years to all persons leading to any violation of this, your imperial decree." So remember, when you go out and vote Democrat or Republican this coming year, you're going to be in violation of the emperor's decree. Wouldn't want to do that now. In other empire news, in 1925 on this date, U.S. Marines leave Nicaragua after 13 years of occupation. Don't worry, they'll be back again and again. Also on August 4, 1944, Netherlands, Nazi police in Amsterdam, acting on an informant's tip, discover Anne Frank and the family in hiding. The eight lived in a single secret room for 728 days, then were sent to the notorious Belsen concentration camp where they were killed except the father. He returned to the house after the war and found Anne's diary. Began at age 12, he recorded the feelings and thoughts, pressures and fears, while coming to age during 2 years of hiding from death. Translated in over 30 languages is a symbol of strength and how brutal humans can be to other humans. People, the time has
come. This is your Radio Roots reporter, Jackie Cook. On this day, August 4th, in 1964, the bodies of American civil rights activists James Chaney, Michael Schwerner, and Andrew Goodman were found in the Mississippi River after disappearing 2 months earlier. The three young activists had traveled together to Mississippi to register black voters and investigate the bombing of a black church. After being arrested for supposed speeding, they were released onto a dark, remote road and greeted by carloads of Ku Klux Klan members. The Klansmen shot the two Jewish New Yorkers, Schwerner and Goodman. But Chaney, a black Mississippi native, was brutally beaten with chains and mutilated before being shot. The killings received massive media attention and ignited public sympathy. But civil rights activists criticized the publicity, stating that had two of the victims not been white, the case would have been largely ignored. Can you think of any other cases like this? Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Lastly, on August 4th, 1988, Congress votes 20,000 to each Japanese Americans in turn during World War II. This week in Radical History for August 5th, 1498. What, no kangaroos? Columbus is the first recent European to land in South America continent, and he thinks he landed in Australia. Speaking of colonization of the New World, in this date in 1620, the Mayflower and Speedwell sail away and also do not find Australia. Unfortunately, if you're Native American, they find them instead. Also on August 5th, 1892, Harriet Tubman gets a pension from Congress for her work as a nurse, spy, and scout during the Civil War. She, along with Sojourn Truth and Susie King, and almost 200 other African-American women, served as nurses during the war in 11 hospitals in over 3 states. Also on August 5, 1936, James Colton, who married anarchist and feminist Emma Goldman in 1925 to provide her with British citizenship, dies of cancer. Colton, an elderly anarchist from Wales, married Emma so she'd be free from the problems of traveling and giving lectures. Also on this date in 1964, U.S. begins bombing of North Vietnam to protect American interests, of course.
The U.S. government has done some bad things over the years and will almost certainly continue to do them in the years ahead. Foreign policy has very little to do with morality. And as long as any action can be justified by explaining that it was performed in the national interest, that will continue to be the case.
Also on August 5th, 1990, Bush sends U.S. Marines into Liberia to protect American interests.
And so we give support to repressive governments in South Korea and Brazil and Chile because it is in our national interest to do so. We will supply sophisticated weapons to backward countries and betray an entire people like the Kurds, all because it is in our national interest. The myth is that since the First World War, we were ever able to conduct our foreign policy any other way. And at best it is naive, at worst hypocritical, that they don't understand what's involved in that harsh reality.
This week in Radical History for August 6th, 1855, Bloody Monday riots. A Louisville, Kentucky mob pulling a brass cannon attacks Irish Quarter, burning down houses and killing at least 20, the Irish being the Mexicans of our day. Also on August 6, 1890, on Good Friday, of course, the first electric chair execution in the United States happens in Auburn Prison in New York. It was a gruesome execution. It had to be done over and over again. And no, he did not rise in 3 days. Also on August 6, 1927, Massachusetts High Court hears final plea for those anarchist bastards, Sutko and Vizzetti, Protest bombs hit homes of Baltimore mayor and Boston mayor. Their controversial trial attracted numerous international attention, with critics accusing the prosecution and presiding judge of improper conduct, like calling them those anarchist bastards, and allowing of anti-Italian, anti-immigrant, and anti-anarchist sentiment to prejudice the jury. Prominent Americans such as Upton Sinclair publicly sided with the citizen-led opposition to the verdict. The two executed elicited mass protests in New York, London, Amsterdam, Tokyo. Workers walked out across South America, and riots in Paris, Geneva, and Germany, as well as Johannesburg, occurred. Also on August 6, 1945, U.S. drops atomic bomb on a civilian population of Hiroshima, U.S. being the only country to use this massive type of WMD. Destroying homes of almost 400,000 people, the bomb explodes in the air and destroys more than two-thirds of the city's buildings. About half the population is burned in ruins, burned to death by the explosive heat or consumed by fire. Thousands of survivors develop radiation sickness, and in 1 month, hundreds more would die in makeshift hospitals and other weakened buildings crumble around them. There is no practical reason to drop the bomb. It did nothing to shorten the war, and Japan was already trying to negotiate peace with the United States. The United States is simply determined to show Russia who is calling a tune in the post-World War. Also on August 6, 1957, 11 activists from the Committee of Nonviolence Action arrested at Atomic Test Proving Grounds in Nevada, the first of what eventually become thousands arrested in Nevada test site and hundreds of thousands around the world. Also on that date, 1967, Indian Claims Commission awards $12.2 million to 8 Lakota tribes for 29 million acres, most of them in the Upper Great Plains, taken by fraudulent treaties. Also on that date, 1985, USSR begins unilateral moratorium on nuclear testing. U.S. responds by conducting more underground nuclear tests. Then in 1989, U.S. expressed moral outrage at India and Pakistan for similar testing. Also on August 6, 1988, Tompkins Square Park police riot in New York. A videotape of the police riot got five cops indicted, the chief retired, the captain moved out of the ninth precinct, and more cops were disciplined and some fired. Lastly on this date, in 1990, U.N. Security Council imposed economic sanctions in Iraq. Total deaths of children under age 5 from the cause of sanctions from 1990 to November 1999 was 502,495 deaths of children. This week in Radical History for August 7th, 1854, rumor that all Catholic churches were arsenals brings a mob of axe-wielding Protestants to St. Louis House of Worship. 8 Irish were butchered like cattle and 30 more seriously wounded, the Irish being the Mexicans of our day. Also on August 7, 1960, Fidel Castro announces plans to nationalize all American holdings. U.S. and the Mafia, which controlled the economy, fights back. And U.S. government takes the moral high ground and begins a nonstop campaign to assassinate Fidel Castro. Also on this date, 1967, Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, in response to a falsely reported attacks U.S. destroyer, passes the House 416-0 and the Senate 88-2. Giving LGB extraordinary powers, authorizing him to use all necessary steps to win the war in Vietnam. Only two legislatures, Morris and Running, vote against it, with no opposition in the House. Then the FBI begins collecting the names of supporters of Morris, and his office phone lines are tapped. Same war, different year. Also on that date, 1978, the Love Canal subdivision, Niagara Falls, New York, built on a site of former Harker Chemical Company chemical dump, formally declared a toxic disaster area by President Carter. Also on this date, 1979, highly enriched uranium released from a top-secret nuclear fuel plant near Irwin, Tennessee. About 1,000 people are contaminated with up to 5 times as much radiation they would normally receive in any given year. Lastly, for August 7, 1995, due to international pressure, state of Pennsylvania announces the stay of its planned August 17th execution of political prisoner Mumia Ojemil. U.S. officials have vowed to silence Mumia at all costs and take extraordinary actions to do so. NPR buckles under the pressure from the right wing. Temple University in Philadelphia, owners of 7 Pennsylvania radio stations, also buckles under pressure, refuses to air tapes in defense of him, cancels contract with Pacifica Network. Free press? Yeah. This week in Radical History for August 8th, 1449. Portuguese slaver Henry the Navigator unloads 6 ships of human cargo slaves from Africa. He proclaims it is the, quote, salvation, unquote, of their souls. Also on August 8th, 1879, Mexico. Revolutionary hero anarchist Emilio Zapata lives. He'll inspire the Zapatista movement. Zapata will continue to live as long as the people believe that they have the right to their own lands and the right to govern themselves according to their own deeply held beliefs and cultural values. Also on August 8, 1925, a huge KKK rally held in Washington, D.C. The modern-day KKK, known as skinheads, with all the right-wing anti-immigrant sentiment, skinheads are increasing in numbers around the United States and the world. Also on this date, 1942, India National Congress passes Quit India resolution, leading to mass arrests by their British masters. Two more items for August 8, 1974. Tricky Dick Nixon, no longer claiming he is a crook, announces he'll resign. Said, "I am not a quitter." Then he quits. Also claimed during the Vietnam War to be a pacifist. Guess he got that one wrong, too. Also on that date, 1980, Reagan aide William Casey leaves on his second trip to bribe Iranians to delay the release of U.S. hostage until Reagan takes office. Only got a couple items in This Week in Radical History for August 9th. 1779, General Clinton and 1,500 American troops break dam and flood the Iroquois towns and fields in upstate New York. Troops then burn and ravage settlement for 12 days. Also on that date, 1945, America Fat Boy dropped on Nagasaki. About 70,000 more civilians die immediately. Truman drops the bomb to prove to Russia that he's tough and gets the Cold War arms race off to an unhealthy start. Also on August 6, 1966, 200 sit-in in New York City's offices of Dow Chemical Company to protest the use of napalm in Vietnam. Edward Abbey would say, "A patriot must always be ready to defend his country against his government." Lastly, for August 9, 1997, New York City cops rape and torture Abner Louima, a legal immigrant from Haiti, sodomizing with a plunger. New York cops always practice their own unique form of justice. This Week in Radical History for August 10th, only got a couple items. 1877, U.S. Army troops under Colonel Gibson attack a sleeping Nez Perce encampment at Big Hole, Idaho, killing over 50 women and children. Also on August 10th, 1893, Chinese are deported from San Francisco under the first Chinese Exclusion Act to exclude Chinese workers from the United States. The Chinese being Irish of that day, the Chinese and Irish being the Mexicans of our day. 1968, eight American GIs killed by U.S. strafing error in Vietnam. Quote, "Vietnam was the first war ever fought without censorship of the media. Without censorship, things can go terribly confusing in the public mind," unquote. General William Westmoreland, U.S. military commander. Lastly, on a state in 1981, the closing of the Nixon Museum, says manager Pete Mitchell, quote, "If nothing else, it's been a good stopping point for people to use the restrooms between Los Angeles and San Diego." This has been This Week in Radical History. Inspiration came from the Slingshot Organizer, thanks to some audio borrowed from the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York, and more radical info came from the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website. Thanks for listening to this week's This Week in Radical History, produced at the Glee Glee Studios. And as always, until next week, I'm yours in a struggle, Mike Cannon.
A voting day every year so that they'll have the illusion of meaningless choice. Meaningless choice that we go like slaves and say, "God, I voted."
We have to interrupt your scheduled program. The United States government has raised war against all indigenous cultures. Military forces have declared martial law on all civilians of the United States.
So turn it back from boomerang. Raise it sharp, call my clutch and round my heart is boomerang. Raise it sharp, call my clutch, round my heart will turn and
drop a bomb on the Pentagon, gone to terrorists. Fuck popping that crisp, want some blood on my fist, killing the judge on the fifth. Before the court's dismissed, cause every time I spit, master getting wit, and every time I flow, frustration start to grow. Bank teller say no, then the bank say, gon' blow. Do you know? If I die, the devil gon' whip me. You want me, Babylon? Devil, come and get me.
No turning back from boomerang. Raise it sharp. Call my clutch and round my heart. Boomerang. Raise it sharp. Call my clutch. Round my heart. No turning back.
This rhyme pattern I use. MCs like to abuse. They tripping all over they gate shoes. Not paying the dues. They claim they cruise. They ducked out on some bug out. Still can't get Boomia out.
Feel no sand, you scream and shout. Strike you with the word of mouth. I chant you down, hunt you down. Cultivate you with the sound. Pound for pound, blow for blow. Hypnotize you with the flow. Yo, we can grow, we can fight. We can argue or unite. Let's be chill, it's time to build. Them till our peace, I'm acting ill.
So turn it back. From boomerangs, razor sharp, from a clutch, from a hawk, this boomerang, razor sharp, boomerang, razor sharp, from a hawk, this boomerang, so turn it back, from boomerangs, razor sharp, from a clutch, from a hawk, this boomerang, razor sharp.
Bounce to this, come on, 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 bounce to this, come on